Oh, man, it's the best group I've been around in baseball.
From NBC New York, this is the Sports Final Podcast, October to Remember edition. Hi, everybody, I'm John Chandler. Glad to be with you here on episode 2.
Only one team goes home happy.
The Yankees were supposed to be 1 year away.
The last time I went home happy was 2009.
But fell just one win shy of the World Series. The Baby Bombers arrived early and played their best baseball late into October. And our Bruce Beck was with them every step of the way.
Switch backflip! Very, very nice run for Danny Davis.
American Danny Davis has influenced snowboarding as much as any rider. Pyeongchang could be his last real shot at an Olympic medal. So you'd think he'd be a little more stoked.
You know, to be honest, snowboarding's a sport where there's so much more than Olympic.
My conversation with the always entertaining Davis. Speaking of entertaining, believe it or not, that's the Jets so far this year. And is it fair to say they can't even tank right?
The floater is caught! Touchdown!
I'll have a thought on the belief that by winning, the Jets are somehow losing. And the area's hockey team doing the most winning to start this NHL season? That would be the New Jersey Devils.
They score! It's Nico Hischier!
The top pick's first impression is my last impression. But let's start with the Olympics.
And then it's just you and the crowd. So here we go. Danny Davis dropping in a little 180 in again.
Danny Davis is something of a wild card in a sport that's been full of them over the years. One of snowboarding's elder statesmen, his comeback story seems to carry over from Olympics to Olympics.
Here we go. Is he going to chuck the double?
In Sochi in 2014, now in South Korea this winter. And let's face it, the guy's been through hell. He's also experienced some of the highest of highs on a halfpipe. But you go back to that tragic accident with his friend and teammate Kevin Pierce suffering a traumatic brain injury. That was his motivation for getting back to Sochi in 2014.
Very, very nice run for Danny Davis.
And he fell short, a disappointing 10th.
How's it going?
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
And through it all, by everyone's account, he's an elite athlete who gives you the impression he'd just as soon sit around, play guitar, and shoot the breeze with you. So that's what we did, minus the guitar.
I always look at the Olympic season like, hey, if I make it, great. I'm looking to do well, and there's so many contests this year, so I'm looking to do well in the contest in general. And if you do well in the contest, you probably have a pretty good chance of going to the Olympics. So I kind of take the approach of, hey, let's start with the contest here, and if we get there, we're awesome, you know. And if not, it's another one of those seasons where you're gonna go ride some more powder. So these interviews definitely kick the pressure on a little bit more and get you thinking about it. So it's good for me.
Not to apply any more pressure to you, but I mean, obviously this would be a big year for you to make this team. You've been one who said in the past, you know, never said the Olympics were the end all be all, but finishing 10th in Sochi in 2014. I mean, obviously, it probably goes without saying you want to get back in 2018 and do a little better, right?
I'm totally down to go and do well. I think it's always been, you know, it was always a dream of mine to go to the Olympics and try it out. You hear a lot about it. And growing up as a kid, I watched snowboarding kind of become an Olympic sport. And, you know, really, it was just something that was really rad for me and my family to experience. You know, my parents were very proud, my grandparents, all my family, my brother, you know. It was just, I think, for my family, it was really rad, you know. It was something cool where X Games and Dew Tour and U.S. Open, things like that, maybe they don't quite understand so much, but on a level of understanding what my accomplishments are, you know, I think that the Olympics kind of makes it legitimate to some of my family and things like that. And so it was a good feeling, man. And to say that I'm not concerned about doing well or going to the Olympics this time around, I would love to go. I would love to do well and represent, you know, myself and the country.
Do you feel that there's maybe an advantage if you're not putting as much pressure on yourself there? Kind of like if you get there, great. If you don't, well, you've had a great career, or is it the reverse? Do you kind of internally feel a little more pressure?
You know, I think that's always my take. My assumption is, you know, let's start small. Let's go for the contests that we got to do well in, and let's focus on those. And if we get there, great. And, you know, to be honest, snowboarding's a sport where there's so much more than Olympics. You know, I think for you know, things like ice skating and, you know, curling, all that, I don't know a lot about those sports, but those Olympic sports, but I feel that Olympics is the pinnacle of those sports. And in snowboarding, we have so much more. You know, we have X Games is a really big part of our sport. U.S. Open's a huge part of it. And then not only that, but we have a whole side of snowboarding that isn't even competition. I mean, there's these guys that go out and film a video part all year, and we look up to them. You know, guys like Travis Rice and Terry A. Hawkins and Nicholas Mueller, like that's really the snowboarder's snowboarder, you know. And I don't want to say no to answer your question, that, like, you know, Olympics is not the most important thing, but realistically in the world of snowboarding, it's just another part of your career. But there's so much more to it.
People have described you as a creative force in snowboarding.
Nice.
Is that, how do you feel about that? Is that a
that sounds great.
Do you see awesome. Yourself that way? Like when you go out there and you're making a run? I mean, do you from a technical standpoint, are you looking at, okay, how can I add some flair to this? How can I have some fun with this?
Definitely. I think the way that, you know, I think the way that I've always looked at snowboarding is how am I different from the next guy? And you know, I think this is, you know, my folks a little bit, you know, just the way they've raised me. But, you know, how am I going to be different from the next guy? Sure, maybe I have the tricks to match everyone, but what am I going to do to really stand out to these judges and or just the fans that I have or the sponsors that I have? Like, what am I going to do that really keeps them so invested in me and keeps people a fan of me? And, you know, whether it's a different trick combination or different grabs, I mean, there's so many things in snowboarding to sort of mix up from everybody else. And I think a lot of people fall into you know, doing what they feel they need to do, the tricks that everybody else is doing. You know, they kind of are playing catch up in a way, and sort of the way that I've looked at it sometimes is just like, all right, well, how am I going to play along and do the tricks I need to do, but then how am I going to stand out? And that's kind of the approach that I take.
How do you stand out? How are you different?
You know, I just think sometimes my approach is maybe a bit different where, you know, like in the last round, you know, the last run for the Olympics and the last few years of competitive snowboarding, there's a big push for more flips, more spins. And, you know, people hadn't really dabbled too much into the switch riding in the half pipe, really exploring kind of switch backside spins and switch stance is obviously riding the other way than your, you know, if you're left foot forward, now you're going right foot forward. And I just started messing with a lot of that stuff the last time around. And it was accepted really well by not only judges, but just the fans of snowboarding. They kind of appreciated sort of the regression, if you will, not seeing so much of the double flips and, you know, multiple times around spins. You know, they really kind of, what I feel it does is allows you to put a little bit more style into the tricks. You know, a lot of these flips and spins are, it's hard to make them look different from this guy or that guy. And when you get to take a little more time and slow it down, you get to put a little bit of your own flair into it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I try to do.
So next focus for you here is December, the Dew Tour Breckenridge. I mean, that's an Olympic U.S. team selection event in the pipe, right?
Is that kind of where you're focused on? Yeah, that'll be a big one.
So, and with the Dew Tour team, I mean, how are you guys pushing each other? How are you motivating each other for this? Is there kind of a little competition amongst your teammates?
You know, well, I'm lucky enough that the team that's at hand right now at Mountain Dew, I'm the only half pipe rider. And then you have Julia and Red, who are both in slope style. Julia is obviously in the women's slope style. Red is in the men's slope style. And really, it's more of a motivator. You know, Red, he's already got one win under his belt for one of the qualifiers that happened last year. So, you know, kind of looking at him and seeing the motivation from him. And we just went on a trip to New Zealand. It was a fun trip. We stayed together, you know, in the same house. And we're on the Burton team as well, me and Red. So it's really an individual sport, but you get inspired, you get motivated by the people who you're close with and the people who you're riding with. And to watch little Reggie and kind of watch him, I mean, he's only 17.
Yeah, I know. He's a kid, huh?
He's sort of like, you know, where I was, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's motivating, you know, where maybe you know, as I'm getting older, maybe you would think maybe I would be slowing down, but then you hang out with these younger kids and you see their stoke on snowboarding, and sort of where maybe in areas where you've gotten jaded, they bring the stoke back out of that, you know, and they get you pumped again. And so it's really kind of interesting how that all works. And, you know, it's been fun to have a couple more riders on Mountain Dew and have a little bit of a team feel. And it's really just fun to travel with everybody, you know. I mean, we all are competitive, that's for sure. And we're all kind of trying to grab some spotlight in the snowboard world. But really, man, we motivate each other in a different way than most sports work.
You still playing guitar?
Definitely still playing guitar, listening to lots of music.
Yeah, what are you listening to?
Gosh, you know, what we do our own. I do a music festival in Vermont every summer. We throw it. It's called the Friendly Gathering.
Sure.
And, you know, I used to listen to a ton of older music, ton of, like, Grateful Dead and Led Zeppelin and
nice.
Black Sabbath.
An old soul.
Whatever.
Just like, very good.
You know, the whole gamut. But then, you know, as I've started to get a little bit more into the contemporary side of things, I've started to listen to a lot more, like, got really into soul music. Got, like, went through, like, a big Etta James phase not too recently. And, which kind of kicked me off into finding, like, contemporary soul music, you know, finding some of these bands, you know, Charles Bradley and the Extraordinaires. I listened to a bunch of him this summer. Lee Fields, was listening to a ton of Sharon Jones, rest in peace. You know, just really got into, like, soul music and contemporary soul music. And then also, of course, you know, we always, you know, once you're a Grateful Dead fan, you kind of stick with them. And so I went to a couple Dead shows this summer and saw John Mayer
fantastic.
Play.
Now, how do you feel about John Mayer playing with them? You're good?
I'm totally down.
Yeah. I mean, he's fantastic.
He's an incredible guitar player. You know, I can't say that I listen to John's albums, you know, in the car, but watching him with the Dead and listening to him play with the Dead, you know that guy knows his way up and down a guitar.
Oh, he's opened himself up to an entire new audience, too. So,
dude, and I just think, you know, it's just he's a really good guitar player.
Yeah.
And I may have never known that, you know, if I hadn't seen him play with the Dead. So I think he brought a little, probably, you know, there's maybe some cuter girls running around at the Dead shows these days and stuff, you know. So he brings a good vibe, you know, and he's a young dude, and he brings a cool element to that band. So I, as much as I'm finding new music, you know, I continue to listen to the old stuff. I was just listening to, like, this really rad Chuck Berry album the other day, and I hadn't even explored much Chuck Berry. So
I'm always trying
to dig deep, for sure, you know.
All right. Well, will you be listening to some of that then when you're on?
Definitely.
On the board, you know, on the halfpipe during a competition? Little Etta James to pump you up?
Yeah, dude.
I like that.
Of course, people always ask me, like, oh, what's the music that pumps you up? And I think they're looking for me to say, like, you know, Drake or Kendrick or, you know, something that's, you know, got some bass and pump you up, some hip hop. But I end up listening to a lot of chill music and rock and roll when I snowboard, and that's just what gets me pumped. So I'll definitely be listening to a bunch of soul tunes this winter.
Well, Danny Davis, we got our eyes on you. We'll be watching. All the best.
All right,
to you.
Thanks, man.
Well, December will be a big month for Danny Davis and most of the Dew Tour riders at Breckenridge, the official U.S. team selection event in the pipe. So that's Danny's shot at getting a spot for Pyeongchang in 2018. Again, he finished 10th in Sochi in 2014. Never said the Olympics would be the end-all be-all, but this could be the end. After saying goodbye in Sochi, why does he keep grinding? Because you have to believe that at the end of the day, he really does want to finish his career by adding a medal to his already long list of accomplishments.
And Bird skies this one shallow center. Correa out, Springer in, Springer calling everyone off. Springer makes the catch, and the Astros are headed to the World Series.
The Yankees fell one win shy of the World Series, and this might be the one time, the one year, that we find that hard to fathom. I know right now you're probably still raging about losing the ALCS, and rightfully so. The Yankees were up on the Astros 3-2 after belting out 19 runs in 3 straight wins in the Bronx. They were down 0-2 to start that series, just like the ALDS against the Indians, and it was almost a miraculous comeback by this Yankees team against really the best team in the American League. Houston had been that way most of the year. They're the most complete team, and they probably are the team that deserves the spot alongside the Dodgers in the World Series. But man, looking at Game 7, CeCe Sabathia versus Charlie Morton, given CeCe was 10-0 after a Yanks loss, you'll live with that matchup every time, right? You couldn't lose at home, you couldn't win on the road, and that ends up being the moral of the ALCS against a better Astros team. Our Bruce Beck was alongside the Yankees the entire October, racking up frequent flyer mileage and a lot of good questions with this young Yankees team.
Cody, what is the hardest part of ending this dramatic run that you guys had?
Well, it's tough, you know. I mean, our goal, obviously, is to get to the World Series and to win the World Series, and anything short of that is a disappointment. You know, at the end of the year, only one team goes home happy, and the last time I went home happy was 2009. It's been 8 years, and, you know, we obviously felt like we were in a good spot coming back here up 3-2, but they play well. They play better than we did, and we ran into some really good pitching, which tends to happen during the postseason, as we saw all series, and just came up short.
Is it puzzling why the bats went silent tonight?
No, I don't think it's puzzling. I mean, we faced some really good pitching. I mean, you know, I think, you know, a little bit of it may be on us and our approach and just not getting the job done. But you got to tip your cap to those guys. I mean, they've got a really good staff over there. They got some really good starting pitchers, and they threw the ball well against us. You know, I thought our pitching all series long, all postseason long, really all season, did a great job of keeping us in ball games and giving us a chance to win. And offensively, we just weren't able to get enough to come through.
Understandably frustrated in that Yankees locker room, their expectation was World Series or bust. We know that's your expectation. That always has been for this Yankees team because, well, they're the New York Yankees. They're held to a different standard than every team in baseball, at least by their fan base, and that's just the way it is. And that's the way you want to get back to. And it looks like that's the way this team is going to operate in the futures to come. But let's just step back a second. I know you want to be greedy and you wanted the Yankees to win that World Series because they got to the ALCS and changed the expectations. But let's appreciate that this team most didn't think would finish better than third this year, and they willed and thrilled their way to a Game 7 in the ALCS. There's something to be said for that. And so they didn't win a World Series this year, but this is one of those years that I think we can step back and say that is still a good season for the Yankees. It's a victory for the Yankees, even though they lost Game 7 of the ALCS. Because along the way, down 2-0 to the Indians, down 2-0 to the Astros, three straight wins in the Bronx that you won't soon forget, this team showed you why there is promise to come.
It's the best group I've been around in baseball, to be honest with you. And you see these guys, you know, giving, you know, hugs to everybody, you know, even maybe some tears even being brought. You know, it's just, it's a great group. It's a fun group to be around. And the way they, you know, the Yankee organization brought me in like one of their own right from the get-go, I mean, I couldn't be happier.
Is it more disappointing? Is it more disheartening because you were so close to getting to the World Series?
I think either way. You know, when you lose, I think it stinks either way. So, you know, we had opportunities that just, you know, we didn't score. And that's the bottom line. In a nutshell, we didn't score. They won 4-0. And, you know, our pitching staff kept us in the game the whole game. And that was it. You know, you look back at those, you know, like we talk about all the time, coulda, shoulda, woulda, you know, I had an opportunity there and, you know, I didn't do my job.
They've got a lot of questions to answer in the off season, but these are the good kind of questions to have. And remember, they still have one of the deepest farm systems in baseball. So the Yankees are in as powerful a position as any team in the game right now going forward. You're going to see them back competing for a World Series next October, probably the October after that, and the October after that.
McCown floats it upstairs. Caught. Jeremy Curley is gone. Touchdown, Jets.
Now to the Jets, who should be well on their way to the top draft pick at this point in the season, right? I mean, their most important film study coming into this year was watching college football on Saturdays to scout their next quarterback of the future. After Hackenberg and Petty, Geno Sanchez, I mean, the list is long. It's not Cleveland Browns bad, but it's pretty close. And the surprise of this season is that the Jets, as a team, aren't Cleveland Browns bad. Actually, not even close. Credit to Todd Bowles and his staff, and veterans like Josh McCown and Matt Forte. They bristled at the talk of tanking. I go back to August. I recall asking Forte with a couple of other reporters about the perception that this team was going to go into the year tanking, and he took a deep sigh, and that should have been a big reminder that the Jets have pride.
That's a strong character trait to have as a team, is when you can fight through adversity, and when you do that, you find yourself in positive situations. And so I think that's what it is more than anything. It starts with Todd and our leadership, but the mindset of this group, the defense standing up.
Josh McCown is having one of his most productive seasons at the position in years. He is one of the better backup quarterbacks, journeyman quarterbacks that we've seen come through the NFL, and he gets a bad rap. But he's a good player, and he's one of the smartest guys at the position in the NFL. In fact, he's probably going to be a coach in the near future once he decides to retire. And he's closer to retirement than I think we really think, and maybe that he wants to think. But he's on the back nine of that career, and the Jets, for that reason, need to go young at quarterback and draft one this year. They're going 6-10, 7-9, 8-8. That might work against the plan. So what are they going to do? Lose the rest of their games to ensure a top draft pick? It goes back to McCown and Forte and these veterans playing with pride and Todd Bowles coaching with pride. Because as Herm Edwards once said, you play to, well, Herm, how'd it go?
You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You play to win. And I don't care if you don't have any wins. You go play to win. When you start telling me it doesn't matter, then retire. Get out. Because it matters.
Yes, yes, that never gets old. Speaking of playing to win, the New Jersey Devils won 6 of their first 7 games. From worst last year in the top pick of the draft to flirting with first in the beginning of the season. And it's because of that top pick. Nico Hischier scored his first 2 goals in one game, one period, in fact, against the Ottawa Senators.
They score! It's Nico Hischier! Off the feed from Drew Stafford, and there it is! Goal number 1 for the first overall pick in 2017.
Feels good. I mean, I knew it's at some point it would come. I just got to keep going.
Well, both of those goals, an example of, I think, what's to like about this 18-year-old Swiss center. He was near the blue paint on that first goal, got himself in position, tapped the stick onto the ice, called for the puck, and then buried it. And then on that second one, he was in the blue paint. He's not afraid to mix it up, and he's going to be good for years to come. I think we're going to see a lot of multi-goal games off the stick of Nico Hischier this year. My last impression on this, the Sports Final Podcast, Episode 2. Thanks for joining us, folks. A reminder, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Follow me on Twitter, John Chandler NBC, and NBC New York as well. Those Twitter accounts will let you know when these podcasts drop. And check us out on social media, across all platforms on NBC New York, because we are going to inundate you with reminders about when these podcasts hit. Thanks for the company here on Episode 2 on the Sports Final Podcast.